Welcome back to Legend in the Field, the podcast where we dig into what's happening in the field and share insights from people helping growers succeed. I'm your host, Shelby Landmark, and today we pretty much around the entire area, we're wrapping up another growing season and a harvest season. And we want to kind of look back at how things kind of, how it all played out, how it shaped out across the region. So this week, joining me is Jeff Sorensen, otherwise known as, we call him Jeffrey. He's our legend seed. He is a legend seed sales agronomist. He has kind of lots of hats though. And he is located near, and he'll correct me if I'm wrong, Morton, Minnesota, I believe, around the area. And he's been in the field this season. He's been in the field many seasons. And not calling you old, Jeff, at all. Just seasoned,
right,
is the words you like, the word you like, your word that you like to say.
That's right.
But
that's right.
Welcome to the podcast. Who are you? Introduce yourself.
Yes, thank you, Shelby, for having me. It's an honor to be on here. Appreciate the invite. So like Shelby said, my name is Jeff Sorensen. I am an agronomist here in Southwest Minnesota. Been with Legend now for 10 plus years, in the same agronomy role, more or less. Came to Legend, had various roles in the ag industry and the seed industry prior to this. And it's been a pleasure working for Legend, like I said, for 10 plus years here, and getting to connect directly with growers in Minnesota and, you know, learn some of their struggles, but also learn from some of their struggles, more importantly.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the biggest factors that we deal with every single year as farmers and ranchers, anyone in the agriculture sector, is weather. And it's challenging because you could do your best to predict it, but I mean, we all can just farm based on the old farmer's almanac or anything, but the weather ultimately determines how profitable we can be as farmers. So as we're wrapping up harvest, I just kind of want you to kind of, you know, dig right in and give us kind of the overall growing conditions that you saw. I mean, across, you know, kind of the Legend footprint, but the territory, kind of what you saw as a whole for that, the growing conditions this year.
Yes. And that was kind of the, I'm gonna call it the eye-opening aha moment for me. A number of years ago, when I started looking at, you know, why did a product not perform? Why did it perform? Why did it work for this customer but not this customer? And like you said, it's weather. Fortunately or unfortunately, it's the one thing that we can't control for the most part. Now, there are things, and I'll talk about some of this here coming up, that we can, you know, use to mitigate some of the effects of weather, whether it's too wet, too dry, hot, cold, whatever it is. But ultimately, weather impacts so much of what we do. And this is why I don't claim to be a meteorologist by any stretch, but I do like to look back at the season and say, you know, this is the events that happen. And usually we can pin it down to a couple of events throughout the growing season that either made our yield really, really good or made our yield really, really poor. And once we can dive into some of those things, it really helps the grower understand what happened. But more importantly, let's learn from it for next year. Now, the challenge, like you kind of alluded to there, is predicting the weather is the challenge. And so how do we use the weather to our benefit to learn from it, but yet not be caught chasing the eight ball year after year? Because I think that's the thing that guys always kind of get hung up on, is they want to pick the plot winner from this year. And that's great, but that's not going to be the winner next year for various reasons, weather being one of those, of what's going on out there.
Yep. Well, and that's kind of one of the biggest factors that comes down to the weather is the timing. And I mean, like every time that we've been out to every field and we're assessing, oh, what's the yield monitor saying on the combine? And you kind of take it to factor like, oh yeah, you know, we had some pretty good timely rains. You know, we had some good growing days, those GDUs. Sometimes the GDU can be screwed too. I mean, sometimes that's not always the main reason why your corn or your soybeans grew so much in those times, and you'll kind of get into that. But kind of what did we see for this past growing season? I guess use yours as an example or whatever you'd like to, but.
Yeah, you know, so we saw some pretty good weather. I mean, so just kind of starting out last fall, you know, we we froze up pretty fast, pretty hard last year. And, you know, we had a really cold winter. And the reason that I bring this up is a lot of guys always get the idea of, you know, winter was cold, we killed bugs, we killed diseases. And that is true to some point. The problem, though, is most of our bugs and our diseases are made for our environment. And so they can handle pretty cold things. And so even though you or I did not enjoy winter, unfortunately, the bugs and the diseases didn't really care from us from that standpoint. But I think, you know, the thing that really summed up the year this year was early. You know, we got into the field incredibly early this year. Yeah. I mean, there was guys, if you wanted to, you could have been planting corn and beans in March. Now, for the most part, most guys weren't, but a lot of wheat got planted in and honestly got planted in really good conditions. And then we turned the calendar into April, and there was a lot of corn and soybeans that were planted that first half of April. And I always kind of talk out of both sides of my mouth here and saying that I always caution guys with planting super early because we can have some reduced stands out there. But I mean, in full transparency, this year, guys got by with it. And it didn't necessarily, it wasn't a big yield increase from the guys that planted the second half of April, but it was their best corn that they had out there, was the stuff that was planted early. Now, why did it work to plant early this year? Because we didn't turn cold until the middle of May. And a lot of cases, the corn and the beans that we planted early were well out of the ground. And we turned cold, but we didn't get a frost to kill them off. And so that kind of set us up on the right foot of just getting stuff out of the ground early, getting a head start. Just things looked really good coming out of the ground. And, you know, in my region specifically, we didn't get a lot of excessive rains. Now, I know there is other parts of Minnesota, even like you go into central Minnesota, and that is not the case. I mean, you got into that middle to end of May and it was rain upon rain. There was areas they had 12 to 15 inches of rain in 48 hours. Yep. And so there they had drowning going on, but that was not the case for most of Minnesota. We had pretty good conditions in that late spring, early summer kind of a time frame. And honestly, that kind of continued for the most part all summer long, fairly timely rains. And I think you kind of alluded to it there of, you know, we always use averages or yearly totals, whether it's GDU accumulation or rainfall accumulation. And most years, the problem we run into with that is, you know, me and my neighbor that are 10 miles away, we got the same amount of rain, but I got 2 inches of rain the 1st of August and he got 2 inches of rain the 2nd of August. And that can play dramatically into when and how that grain fill happens. Yeah. So I think that's the important thing to consider in a lot of these questions when you're comparing yourself to other people is when did the weather happen? Because that matters as much as anything. The other thing, though, that we looked at this summer was, you know, GDU accumulation. And most people looked at it and said, yep, we were right on track for GDU accumulation. And that's a true statement. We tracked all summer long, pretty much at average. The part that's not the true story in this whole thing, though, is, you know, heat is important to corn and soybeans. But what's even more important is the sun. I mean, we need to photosynthesize and we need to, you know, create that plant. The problem is when we get rain, what comes with the rain is clouds, and clouds is not a good thing. You know, we don't get to photosynthesize. The other part is, you know, depending upon the geography in Southwest Minnesota, we had a lot of smoke also this year that messed with that photosynthesis. And we especially realized that in the soybeans this year, with a lot of two bean pods and a lot of that I can attribute back to when we had that smoke and when we had that cloudy weather, the middle of July timeframe when we were setting a lot of those pods. So, I mean, overall, though, it was a pretty good growing season. I don't think a lot of guys should complain.
Yeah. Well, especially, I mean, the yields are showing it this year, especially with corn. I mean, on our farm, this is probably some of the best yields that we've ever had.
Yep.
Prices aren't there and elevators are closing all over the place, but
right. I mean, there's
hey, at least our yield monitor is looking good, but
yeah,
but no, that's one thing that, I mean, there was probably what I mean, you maybe have the statistics on it, but what, or the data, I should say, how many days was there smoke cover compared to actual cloud cover?
Yeah. So when we look at, I don't know the exact number of days, but when you look at just what you consider solar radiation or the amount of sun that we have, when you compare it to average, about the middle of July is when we started actually dipping below average for solar radiation. And by the time we got into middle of August, we were somewhere in the range of 3 to 4 days behind normal solar radiation accumulation. And that doesn't sound like a lot in the grand scheme of things. But when you think of, GDU accumulation, all of a sudden you start to get, a few days behind on GDU accumulation. We're a long ways behind, actually, in terms of when that crop is going to mature. The big thing, though, is, when you start getting behind in those longest days of the year, because remember, on June 21st is when the summer solstice is, and so that's when we have the longest days of the year. You start giving up a couple of those longest days of the year. I mean, that's the equivalent of 3 to 4 days this time of year. And so we can, when we start losing days to cloudiness, but we also start, losing days to smoke and smog, and that was very, wind pattern driven as to which parts of our corn belt was going to see the smoke on any given day. But we were a significant number of days behind by that middle of August timeframe.
And what we, I mean, obviously, Legend Seeds, we sell seed. We sell hybrids and varieties of corn and soybeans. But could you kind of cover a few of the specific hybrids or varieties that really stood out to you, especially in the growing conditions that they had? Maybe I'm throwing this at you, but I know you're pretty good at being able to be put on the spot. So give
Yeah,
you
no, it's a
just
good
kind of
question.
a
I think, I'm gonna back up one step here first, in that the hybrids and the varieties that rose to the top for two different reasons, at least in my area. The first reason being corn rootworm. Anything that had rootworm trait on it definitely rose to the top. Now we've been in the Southwest Minnesota area. We've been in this heavy rootworm pressure for about going on 3 to 4 years now, and every year just keeps getting worse and worse and worse. And there's other ways to control rootworm other than, traits in corn. And maybe we can talk about that on another podcast. But so anyway, so rootworm traited corn definitely rose to the top. The other thing that rose to the top this year was disease resistant hybrids and varieties for that matter. I mean, we had, because we had the rain and we had the heat, we had disease terrible this year. We had some tar spot out there. We had a lot of southern rust was the biggest one in this area. Switching gears a little bit on soybeans, we had a lot of sudden death this year also, and that goes back to that early planting time frame. Anytime you plant early, we have a higher risk of sudden death setting in later on in the season. As well as some white mold. I know as we moved further east into Wisconsin, white mold became a lot bigger issue. But so when we look at back to your original question of, what rose to the top this year, and it really came down to which varieties handled tar spot and sudden or southern rust, is
Sure.
really kind of the biggest takeaway in there. And when we look at in this area, varieties that rose to the top, 9397 Power Core. Still doing extremely well in this area. Handle stress pretty well, but it also has a lot of top end potential with it. And it's one of these that a lot of guys kind of overlook it a little bit because it doesn't always rise to the top in plots, but what it does is just so consistent across the field out there. And so that's consistently been a top one there. However, I do have my eye set on a new variety, 9697 Double Pro, is really kind of closing that gap, and I think that's gonna be a nice play, nice tag team with 9397 on the earlier side. We get into this mid-group range products, that 100-day maturity stuff. 9503 Duracade, again, now we're getting into this rootworm conversation a little bit. As well as 2A17 Vorseed. Both of these are rootworm products. Both of these rose to the top this year. And I think part of it was a rootworm, but also part of it was both of those have extremely good disease tolerance with them as well. You know, the other thing too that really kind of showed this year was later maturities definitely paid off. I mean, you got guys that are normally planting 105, 106 day corn that if they had 110 day corn, I mean, they were probably 20 bushel better with it. And part of that just came down to, we had so much heat late in the season when that corn was, you know, maturing essentially. I mean, we, in a lot of cases, we went from 30% moisture corn or physiological maturity to 15% moisture corn in a week or two. And so that dry down just was incredibly fast. And so anything we could do to delay that definitely helped. So on the later side, the one that really stood out to me was 9606 Power Core. Just had a great year. It's a new product for us. It brought in a lot of the consistent defense that we've had in the past with the 9505 and the 9106, and it brings in some top end potential with it in there. So kind of a little bit of a mix for you in terms of rootworm and non-rootworm corn. But the other thing that I'm going to always, you know, encourage guys to look at is multi-year data. Because like we talked about before, I can guarantee you one thing, and that is that next year won't be the same. I don't know if it's going to be wetter. I don't know if it's going to be drier. Yeah, exactly. Next year won't be the same. And so look at multi-year data on this stuff, because that's going to be your best eye look into what's going to happen next year for you.
Yeah. And that's one thing, like you said, you know, depending on the growing season, how the weather changes, what's going to happen, if only we're able to predict or know.
That's what I always tell guys, is if you could tell me what the weather is going to be next year, I can guarantee you I'll pick you the right hybrid.
Exactly.
Unfortunately, that's a pretty tough thing too.
Think how much easier our jobs would be if we were able to be like, yeah, you know, it's going to be like this year, so I think we should do a later or an earlier hybrid, make sure you get the best bang for your buck. So,
well, this is actually interesting. This is one of the years that's kind of proven me wrong, I'll be honest with you, is the adage is always to, when you get in the field early, you want to plant a later maturity corn because, like, well, I'm in the field early. Yeah, that is true. The thing you got to remember is, roughly speaking, 4 to 5 days earlier in the spring is only equal to about one day in the summer. So really, you're not actually shortening up or extending your growing season all that much if you're planting on, you know, let's just say April 15th instead of April 25th. Now, this year was the year that was actually a true statement, though. I mean, there was some of the stuff that got planted early. We got the heat accumulation, and it came out of the ground really, really quickly. And it, you know, you could have lengthened out your maturity a little bit longer. But, you know, usually what ends up happening is we get that heat spell in April, and then all of a sudden we turn cold for the second half of May, and now all of a sudden you're behind average on GDU accumulation or you know, growing season.
Yeah, right. So, I mean, we can't control the weather. We can't control necessarily what's going to happen over the course of the 3 or 4 month growing season over the summer, but we can work on our management practices or the agronomic decisions, you know, what we're going to have the co-op or what you as your operation are going to apply to your fields. And those do make a big difference if you do them correctly. So were there any management practices that you saw or those decisions that the grower made that made big differences in yield or just the overall health of the crops this year that you saw?
Yep. Yep. So a couple of comments, fertility wise, especially when we start, you know, pushing these big yields, you know, the 250s, the 300s, fertility is key. And especially your phosphorus and your potash, your two big building blocks. There's a lot of other ones, your zinc, your manganese, that play into here. But the guys that had high fertility levels this year, definitely seemed to benefit, from really cranking out the top end yields. The thing that probably did not help us as much this year was, high rates of nitrogen. And that's going to go counter to what we would normally think of when we, you know, crank out big yields. We think we need a lot of nitrogen out there, and we did need a lot of nitrogen. The difference though was we had continual rain to keep that soil moist. And so we were constantly getting mineralization of nitrogen from the organic matter. And so we actually didn't need as much nitrogen out there as what some of you guys would have thought for 300 bushel corn. But other management decisions that, you know, really helped to increase the yield this year was fungicide. And again, that goes back to the disease conversation we had out there. in a lot of cases, we're seeing 20 plus bushel advantage to fungicide this year, on corn, that is. Now I saw plenty of fields though where there was very little advantage to it though. And partially it came down to disease history, but also comes down to that hybrid that you're planting and what is the disease tolerance of that hybrid. And just because a corn hybrid doesn't, or soybean variety doesn't have good disease tolerance, does not mean it's not a good hybrid. That just means that we need to look at other management decisions with it, i.e. fungicide on there, to help make that crop a better crop out there with it. So I think the couple of things that really shined this year was fertility, but then it was that late season applications of fungicide. The other thing that on soybeans especially, it seemed like it hurt guys this year is aphids. And it was really, really spotty where they were.
Yeah.
But where they were very, very bad also. And so some of these guys got out there, they got in the habit of, well, it's the 1st of August. I don't need to look for aphids anymore. They're not here. Well, lo and behold, a lot of these aphids came in late. I mean, we were talking the end of September timeframe. And when they came in really bad. And I mean, some of these guys were talking 5-6 bushel difference on soybeans based on if they sprayed it or if they didn't. Right. For aphids this year. So, I mean, there's a lot of management decisions that are pretty easy to make, honestly, on it. Now, my caution that I'm gonna give guys is, again, every year is a little different. And so for the guys that are going to listen to this podcast and say, yep, fungicide paid this year, I'm going to spray a fungicide on everything next year, I'm going to tell you that's the wrong decision right now. because fungicide is such an easy thing to predict if you're going to need it or not. And what I mean by that is, it's hard to predict the weather for it, but what it is easy to do is, especially on corn, all you got to do is scout your fields and see if you have the disease out there. And if you have the disease, go out and spray for it. Now, I know it's not fun walking in a cornfield in the middle of August, but when you're talking spending $20-$30 an acre for a fungicide, if you pay me that much an acre, I'm going to walk a lot of fields. And so I think that's the big thing is, a lot of these issues are easily managed if you scout your fields.
Right. Or have an agronomist help you.
Exactly.
Especially if you don't know what you're looking for. Yep. I think sometimes, and I have just heard this just in conversations that I've overheard too, of the importance of the crop rotation. Is that a big factor? I know it is in disease, taking care of, you know, controlling disease pressure in sometimes, especially with corn on corn, is what are the, I'm throwing this at you too, because I know you can handle it, but the importance of, I guess, doing crop rotations or not doing crop rotations. Can you kind of just touch on that quickly? Because I think it's kind of, it's, there's a lot of people, I think, in the countryside that don't understand if there is an importance to it, or you know, they just kind of, they've always done it. So just, can you kind of explain the importance of that?
Yeah. So crop rotation is huge for a couple of reasons. And the thing we need to realize is Mother Nature is actually getting pretty smart in most cases, to crop rotation. What I mean by that is corn, soybeans. We just every other year rotate on there. The issues that we run into here, I'll give you one example of it. And there's many of them, is in corn rootworm. Most of our rotated fields have northern corn rootworm problems in there, and they've gotten smart. They've got extended diapause. And what that means is instead of the eggs hatching every year, they hatch every other year. And so what that looks like in the eyes of the rootworm is, even though you're doing a crop rotation in there, it's almost like it is a corn on corn field, if you will. Now that is not necessarily the case, with a disease standpoint. The thing I will encourage guys to do, and this has become actually a bigger and bigger issue with chopping corn heads, actually, is as soon as you have your fields combined, assuming you're going to do tillage, if it's a no-till field, that's a whole nother conversation. But assuming you're going to do tillage out there, make sure we're following that combine as closely as we can with the tillage. And the reason for that is I want to keep all my leaves and my residue on my field. One, I want it for my own organic matter. I'm selfish. The other problem, though, is what is blowing with those leaves when they blow in your neighbor's field is all that disease as well. Yep. So now we're spreading disease from one field to the next. And so if we think we're in a rotated situation, but we're not actually, because we're getting all these problems that are blowing in from our neighbors as well. So that's one. Those are the problems with rotation. The reality of it, though, is, I mean, rotation is the best thing that we can do out there, because from a disease standpoint, it breaks up the cycle. From an insect standpoint, it breaks up the cycle. Only problem, though, is usually we need to get into more of like a 3 to 4 year rotation. And this is why guys will notice if you do like 2 years or 3 years of corn on corn, and then you switch back to soybeans, your soybean yield in a lot of cases is 5, sometimes even 10 bushel better in the soybeans when you go back to it. And it all has to do with that insect and the disease rotation in that field. I mean, so again, I get profitability, but this also goes back to why we used to have a 4 or 5 crop rotation and stuff. So the longer we can rotate, back to your question, the better off we are. The last caution that I will leave guys with is cover crops and how this plays into the rotation. And I'm not here to sell you to do or don't do a cover crop. The thing I want guys to always realize with a cover crop, though, is your cover crop a host for a disease? And what I will give you as an example of this is rye is used a lot of times as a cover crop. Great product. The problem with it is rye is a grass, corn is a grass. The disease spectrum between both of those plants is almost identical. And so now if we're planting rye following soybeans, what we're doing is recreating a disease host for all of those diseases to be ready to infect that corn the following year.
Sure. And that makes sense. I mean, and then that's the things that people just don't think of because they just want to do a cover crop to try to help their soil.
But right. Really, and there's a lot of benefit. There's a lot of great benefits that come with it. Don't get me wrong. But I think it comes down to don't just hit the easy button of what I can pick up in my local Fleet Farm store. Right. You know, let's figure out what do you actually need to accomplish with this cover crop out there.
Yeah, exactly. So we're kind of coming up on the end of my questions, and I just kind of want to look towards next season. So looking ahead to 2026, what are you looking ahead at? Kind of some of the lessons that maybe we learned from this year, what's kind of somewhat being predicted for next year that we can kind of try to prepare ourselves as we go into this planning of picking our seed and getting kind of like your fertilizer and your chem plan put together. What should we be looking for right now? Or what are some lessons that you learned from this year that you could take from into 2026?
Yeah, you know, and I think the biggest thing is what do we see as trends? And the couple of trends that I've been paying attention to the last number of years is one is weed management. You know, that was one of the things we struggled with this year. And so weed management is something that is a systems approach. It's not something that is reactive. And what I mean by that is we need to have a plan in place, whether that is putting a pre-emerge product down or whether that's doing some sort of residual, whatever it is, weed management is becoming more and more difficult. And we need to be thinking about that before we plant the crop, because once we see the weeds out there, a lot of times they're too big and they're too hard to kill. The other thing is, you know, what I talked about there before, what are we seeing in terms of trends of diseases and insects? Because a lot of times those trends continue and it's an ebb and a flow, but it seems like we're on that upward trajectory right now with disease management and insect management. And so what can we do when we're picking varieties so that we know that, you know, I want to plant this variety on this field because it has good disease tolerance, or I want to plant this variety on this field because I have rootworm pressure. But the other part of that is don't get pigeonholed into something that, you know, you just say, I have to have rootworm because I've had rootworm pressure in the past. There are other management tools out there. We've got a whole host of biologicals that can help with that. There are other tools out there that help with disease, like we talked about with the fungicide. And so when we make these seed decisions, we always have the best intentions of planting this on this field. Make sure we follow through with that when we get in the heat of the battle with planting. And if we didn't follow through with that, that still isn't the end of the world. But now let's think about, oh, I planted this hybrid on this field that has really bad disease pressure. Let's make sure we're out there scouting it, you know, to stay ahead of it is the biggest thing.
Right. And having someone in your corner. Don't think that you're out there by yourself making those decisions. I mean,
and that's the thing that I always tell guys is don't be afraid to call us. I mean, as an agronomist, that's the number one thing that I do is I'm on the phone a lot. And I would much rather you call me in, you know, the end of June saying, gosh, you know, I think I got rootworm pressure out here, or I think I got southern rust showing up out here. I'd much rather have the phone call of it being nothing than the phone call on the 1st of October when you're combining your corn and you're combining 150 bushel corn instead of 200 bushel corn. Right. And now we have to play detective and figure out, okay, here's what happened. What could have we done to have solved the problem? So, I mean, absolutely. Always pick up the phone. Always call someone. There's a host of agronomists within Legend. Don't be afraid to ask what you might think is a dumb question.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for your time, Jeff. You know this information from front to back, and I appreciate the time you took to kind of give us just a, and this was just scratching the surface of some of the information that you can share and some of the conversations that we can have. So I'll have to bring you back and talk about other interesting things when it comes to weather, and maybe by that time you'll be a meteorologist and you'll have even more information.
You know, I always love paying meteorologists because I can be wrong all the time and I still keep my job. So there's that. But no, thank you for the time. I appreciate it. And like I said, if you guys have any questions, call. All of us agronomists, we're always willing just to bounce ideas off. And I'm not saying I'm right all the time by any stretch of the imagination, but it's one of those things that the more we can, you know, talk back and forth, and I mean, we can learn from each other. And so thank you very much for the time today.
Awesome. Well, and from those weather challenges and the crop performance, we can go into 2026 knowing that we can somewhat be prepared, as we always think we are. So thanks for joining us, Jeff. And for you, thanks for joining us, and we'll be seeing you out in the field.